everyone. I hope everyone's having a good day or morning, afternoon, evening, depending on where you are in the world. So I'm really, I feel really honored to be here with John in the Bloom Bar space. It feels really, I don't know, kind of magical sitting here with him and with Amit. But, you know, I just met John, I would say recently. I say it's been about 6 months. We had a service-based retreat back in July, and John came to that, and that's the first time that I had met him. I'd heard about Bloom Bars, but I never had a chance to really visit it. And I didn't realize that Saturday when he walked through my door that my heart was being blessed with so much love, really. And since I've spent time with John and gotten to know him and just seeing the way that he lives his life, just I'm constantly blown away and inspired. And we're all really lucky to have to be able to host Wednesdays here at Bloom Bars. But, you know, before we even start talking about Bloom Bars, a little bit about John, you know, before he founded in 2008, he was the Senior Vice President of GMMB. It's a social marketing and advocacy communications firm. And he had clients ranging from Bill and Melinda Gates Foundations, Global Libraries, to the Fetzer Institute's Campaign for Love and Forgiveness, the One Campaign's Live 8 Concert. And before that, he's led efforts to increase participation of communities of color and children in the U.S. Census. He has this amazing talent to attract people. When he was general manager of Capital Radio Network, he increased the network's audience from several thousand to more than 10 million listeners. So all of that before he established Bloom Bars in 2008 in this community, Columbia Heights neighborhood of D.C. So I'll let, with that, that's a good segue into talking about Bloom Bars, learning more about it. So, John, that's what I wanted to ask you first. Can we start with the call by you just talking about, you know, the idea of Bloom Bars? What is it all about? What are you trying to do with it?
Sure. That's a good question. And I think it was Rajesh when he talked about sort of how he thinks about things differently every day. And I think that's how I view Bloom Bars. I look at it differently every day. And if I could just take a moment to thank everyone on the call, and especially Nipun, who I felt like I was called to when we had that retreat. And I've just always been blown away by Karma Kitchen. And my service has been coming back to our, we have a singer-songwriter showcase every Sunday night. Is just to take a moment and talk about Karma Kitchen and the wonderful experience that I just had, encouraging everybody to go there. So that's, I think, was my introduction to the folks at Karma Kitchen, which brought me to Nipun. And, you know, I have to say, since you know, we planted the seed in front of this building and called it Bloom Bars, I've struggled to define what it is and what it's going to be. You know, there's a vision and there's a big vision, but there's the present and recognizing, you know, all the people around that bring these ideas and love and their souls to something that, you know, they want to experience differently. So when I learn more from Nipun about this idea of, you know, of charity focus and the gift economy, which I really hadn't heard a lot, to be honest with you, and you know, thinking about Bloom Bars, you know, are we going to be a nonprofit, or are we going to be a social venture, or I don't feel like we don't fit in these boxes. We just want to be in a space and really connect people, you know, and connect people in a way that I think inspires them at a time when, you know, a lot of people are going through these, I think, moments of self-reflection and questioning. And, you know, I think we're in this transition period where we're searching. We're kind of searching. We're searching for each other, and we're connecting in different ways, like on Facebook and online. But we're still missing something. And I think you know, changing the way that I've thought just today, waking up and thinking about water and how it carries, you know, music and the resonance of music and what that does to ourselves and our bodies, and not just music, but art and creativity, what that does to for us as a community, is what I think, you know, is what Bloombars is really about. It's about supporting those people who have committed everything of themselves to their art, but not just their art, but to the community and the idea that they have more to grow to reach their potential. And when we support their potential, and we support all of our potential. And it's, of course, the reverse. You know, I tell folks, they come in, and we've never had a sign in front of Bloombars. It's always just said, this is a good friend of mine who lives in Kansas City, wrote right on the top, "You bloom, we bloom." And it's a very simple idea, is that, you know, we all are, I think, we want to bloom. Blooming is just reaching your full potential. And recognizing that that to grow, we don't grow just alone. We grow together. We're all connected. And if we support one person's growth, we support all of our growth. So the idea of Bloombars is for people to come into a space, anybody, regardless of their age, gender, you know, where they are, what their place is, that they can come in to a space and feel like they're at home, like they're connected to something, and experience something that I think that can put them in a place where they can, you know, have those moments of, you know, that spark. It doesn't have to be the transformation. They could be in this place, but just, you know, it makes them think differently. And that's Bloombars. It's grown at a steady place. I still think it's at its very early stages. You know, I feel like I'm humbled to even be on this call and know who else has been on it, because it doesn't feel like, you know, we've even started to reach our potential. But I think it's with, you know, meeting people like Nakoon and Bela, and having you come into the space and bringing Wednesdays, it's already changed who we are in a beautiful way. I mean, you know, Silas, who I'm sure has been on these calls, he's just, you know, he's my brother. You know, there's no other way to look at it. Like, I have a new brother. That's it. I just have a new brother, you know, and I know he'll be there, and I can call him, and he's just, you know, just a beautiful soul, and I love getting to know him. And he comes here, and he, you know, he paints, and he fixes things, and, you know, he gets dirty. Yeah, I mean, he'll go up on ladders. Like, he paints at the outside. Like, he comes by, and he, you know, he's in the edit suite. He's a filmmaker, if you don't know. And, you know, he actually bought a theater in Maine that he wants to do, you know, something similar with art and connecting people. And he loves service. And, you know, people like that, and Bela and Krishna, who just, you know, it's not just about Wednesdays, it's about coming into a community and building a community. And just having meditation every Wednesday at Bloombars has, you know, has just given us even a stronger, I think, foundation, just being able to have a power of silence every week, where we're all just, you know, we're connected through our vibrations and our energy and our love. It's changed who we are, and that's what I think. That's what Bloombars is today.
That's a wonderful description, Bloombars. I just wanted to just chime in here for a quick second, just to give some of the folks that are on the call some context. So for those that don't know what Bloombars is already, it's actually a physical space. It's in the Columbia Heights neighborhood of D.C., as Val had mentioned earlier, and it's, imagine sort of a two-story, almost kind of row house or whatnot, completely cleared out, and it's made into one of the most inviting, like energetic, sort of, you know, art studio / performance space / theater, art gallery, and you walk in and, you know, you'll see paintings all over the wall, and all the paintings are just different artists that have decided to put up their art in this space. You know, there's places where you can sit and play music. There's a stage down sort of on the main floor. They have an audio and lighting system, and it's really a place where you can come and express yourself. And so John has created this space for others to share, and as he says, you know, you bloom, and we all bloom.
So, John, why art and community? What was the role of art and service and, you know, being a part of community and being connected to community and also working to connect community, what was the role of all of those things in your life growing up, you know, with your parents growing up? And I know you grew up in a small town in New England and then, you know, went to Howard here. So what is the influence of that in, you know, into Bloom Bars?
Well, I think I'm my mother and father's son. You know, I really am a product of two people who, you know, throughout their entire lives came from very different worlds. My father from very humble means in southern Georgia, moving to a small city called Chester, Pennsylvania, and my mother coming from Montclair, New Jersey, from a much the opposite circumstances, and both committed to service and fighting injustice that was happening at the time, whether it was, you know, in the schools and, you know, there were no unions, and it was just a, you know, it was a really difficult situation. And, you know, they fell in love in the midst of that and pretty much committed the rest of their lives to education and service. And, you know, I grew up protesting and going to, you know, no nukes, whether it was nuclear weapons or, you know, these wars that were going on and just really, you know, moving for peace. It instilled something in me where if I wasn't you know, doing something of service, I just felt empty and without purpose. And I think that's what life is about, you know, living a purposeful life and serving others. What else is there? Also, you know, I mean, I just want to go back to your description of Bloom Bars, and I thank you. You haven't been here for 20 minutes, and you've captured it, you know, and that's the idea, you know. It's supposed to capture you, but the idea really isn't that we're you know, I don't like to think of us as a space, and I don't even like to use the V word venue, because we like to think of this as a community. You know, we really brought a community together inside of a space, and that can happen anywhere. And we're outside of the space. We're at farmers markets. We're at festivals. We do all kinds of things, you know, people's homes and other like film circumstances. So yeah, I think that the idea is that you can build a community, and this is just the intention that goes behind it, and really thinking differently about and how you're welcoming people into the space and what's possible in the space, being creative, being able to experiment, and being purposeful. So it's just not, I can give you a couple examples. On Saturday nights, the first of the month, we host Sunrise Cinema, you know, and we know that a lot of people come into Washington and have a great time and drive long distances back to wherever it is they're going when they shouldn't be driving. So we have all-night movies where people can come and just choose what movie they want to see, and we watch movies all night. You know, so it's really trying to find kind of the needs in the, you know, in a purposeful way, using art. And, you know, of course, there's lots of ways for people to just come in and express themselves, whether it's our garden open mic where people come and do comedy, spoken word, you know, storytelling, dancing, I mean, you name it, and you see people for the first time who've never done this before, getting up on stage, people, all kinds of people, and from all ages. I mean, we've had 8-year-old hosts, we've had 12-year-old features, we have parents bringing their kids, and, you know, everybody says, you know, this is what a bar, why can't a bar be this, that we're not serving alcohol, but we're serving community in a place where people can, you know, can come in and experience something outside of their normal, you know, their normal interaction. So that's a big part of it. And I think the other part that, you know, I always kind of neglect to mention is connecting with communities that are far outside of, you know, our space. And that's from bringing artists from overseas and doing international exchanges and having them, you know, learning from them and what they're doing in their communities, and going there. And that's I think, been the most exciting thing, you know, in the last couple of years, is seeing, you know, the similarities that exist in distances, whether it's Brazil or South Africa, building a relationship and then creating something out of that relationship, whether it be music or art or initiative in the community. And that's happening. You know, that's that's the beauty. That you know, it's not something that just happens in it. You know, there's something building here, and that's what's the beautiful thing is you're really seeing this growth. That's, you know, all kinds of blooms, you know, happen. But then there's those trees, those redwoods that you see that are like, oh wow, like the potential of this is so beautiful. But it really is, you know, recognizing that it's not one person, it's not me, it's everyone that's in the space. It's Bella, it's everyone who comes into the space is that there's
so creative.
Yes.
Wow. you know, I was listening to you and some of the words that really stood out, you were speaking of intention and, you know, just thinking differently about what is possible in your life and in the world and your connection to the world. And it made me think about this question I had. You know, I'm just thinking about your background. As I mentioned, you used to be senior vice president of a social marketing firm. You know, what you went from having a flashy business card and a flashy title to finding a space without even a name on the door. You know, a lot of people, when I tell them about Bloom Bars, they're like, gosh, I must have walked past it like 100 times and I didn't even see it, because you don't advertise it and market it in that way. I guess, so my question is, you, from your background, you have the talent, amazing talent and ability to market Bloom Bars and make it huge in a way that attracts paid staff, lots of media attention. What has kept you from doing this? You know, what are the challenges in sticking to the way that you want Bloom Bars to be?
That's a great question, and I think and thank you, Rajesh. It goes back to thinking about things differently every day, and thinking about, you know, throwing out everything I knew about social marketing and building communities around causes and, you know, changing behavior through messaging and all these things that we use. You know, and thinking about what was missing. I mean, I think, you know, what I did for over a decade, you know, we had all these amazing tools to change people's, you know, behavior, to make them, you know, wear condoms or, you know, think about, you know, remember the kids in foster care and look for, you know, adoptive homes and, you know, just all these things that I think, you know, we all should be thinking about. But thing that the afterthought in all of our campaigns was the arts and music, and how do we engage artists, and how do we build, you know, community around this that really inspires people to engage. So that's I think. Sorry.
No. Sorry, technical difficulties. Just one second.
No, ask your question again, too, because I had more to say on that. Repeat your question.
Yeah. I just, you know, I was actually this Thursday or Friday, I was perusing the Bloom Bars website. It's really so much going on here. It's a calendar full of all of these events. Like, on January 8th, I missed it. I was in India. But there was a line out the door of the National Symphony Orchestra fusing with hip-hop artists here at Bloom Bars. And it's on YouTube, and it's amazing. And there's just all kinds of stuff going on like that. And yet it's like it's slowly becoming known, well-known throughout D.C. and in the greater D.C. area. But it's happening organically. Word of mouth inspiration that's creating this, you know, the spread of Bloom Bars word of mouth. But I think about this talent that you have, your background in being able to use marketing and create awareness about a brand, an idea, and you can do that. And I know you can make Bloom Bars. Not that it's not huge in a different way, but you can make it huge, like, in a sensational way if you wanted to. And there's, like, this fine line, I think, between your ego and your pure intention. And how do you tread that fine line? It's just amazing.
You know, you try to have humility, and I think that, you know, removing yourself, not putting myself out front and putting the idea and the intention out front was a conscious thing. And I think, I mean, part of it, when you asked me about, you know, moving from this transition, you know, getting rid of the business card, I mean, I had to go through a metamorphosis. You know, it was really a difficult time of, you know, a really, really challenging time, you know what I mean, that you know, I wouldn't wish upon anybody. But I think it had to happen, you know, moving through that pain and questioning and to get to a place where, you know, you the light came through, you know, and the light bulb went off and it opened a door and it opened a window. But it was really just taking that leap and, you know, opening the door and walking through. So why no marketing? You know, I think we wanted people to just walk in the door and discover it. I think when you read about it, and it's, you know, and we have been fortunate. We've been in the New York Times. We've had all these write-ups in the Washington Post. We, you know, CNN International was here this week doing a story, and, you know, we're getting this great press, and it's wonderful. You know, you can't look a gift horse. It's a beautiful thing. But the story, I think, you know, what I love about Works and Conversations and just this call is that, you know, these stories don't evolve over a couple of days or a year or 2 years. They happen over time, and I think it's about building relationships. And if you're inviting people in for some pre-imposed idea of what the experience is going to be, and you've sold it to them, it's different. You know, you have to walk like you when you walk in here. You just have to walk in here yourself and experience it and feel like you're home and take ownership. And that's the only way we bloom. You know, and that's how we have to, I think, live our lives outside of the space and carry that out to our work and other facets. And it's the same thing with the smile card. It's infectious. It's a ripple effect, and we are a ripple, and we're a seed, and now we just have to plant more seeds.
You know, creating a space like this, as beautiful as it is, it also requires. It requires financial support to a certain degree. It requires probably some personal sacrifice on your side, and you've probably come along things along your path in terms of, you know, when you first started this to even to the present day, where you question what you've done. And so I guess tell us a little bit about that. You know, things that have kind of, you know, made you question whether you should continue this or why you're still here. And I don't know why it's still going.
it's an ongoing thing. Yeah, there have been lots of challenges, and you know, I pretty much just threw all the dice in. I threw all everything in to this and this idea, and anything worth anything, it requires great sacrifice, and you know, I think part of that metamorphosis is shedding the idea that things matter, and that, you know, we need to consume, and that we can live very simply, and our relationships are worth a lot more than, you know, how much money we're making, and I think also, you know, again, creating that welcoming environment, not having a cover charge, and that's something we believe very strongly in, that, you know, that's a barrier. You know, no matter what, if somebody walks in and they say a cover charge, like to enter the space, you have to, you eliminate half the population, and even people who you think, you know, who might have the means, you know, just that transaction barrier, and when you remove that, I think it's critical. That said, you need to be supported, and you know, we ask for individual donations, we ask for suggested donations. We never turn anyone away. We've been able to survive just, you know, on that. We also offer the space as a retreat for organizations. So organizations come in, and that helps support. But I think, you know, long-term sustainability, and that goes back to why I think, you know, we're really at our early stages, is the model, as I kind of envision it, or the road to sustainability. You know, the next level is looking you know, beyond our borders and thinking about the things that we're creating here and telling those stories in a way that, like I think Bill was saying, that everybody knows about this, that it can be supported and sustained, and that we're offering more things like music and compilation CDs, and we'd like to have a tea and vegan health food bar up here. So there's other things that are sort of growing into the space, but establishing this the open space for these things, these programs to happen, whether it be theater, music, dance, poetry. You know, we've got all these things for babies. I have a 15-month-old now, which has completely changed my life, you know, in ways that every parent knows, in the most beautiful ways I had never anticipated. And it's opened me up, and it's really, you know, it's filled my heart with this love. It vibrates in the space, and she comes up here, and just seeing her experience everything new for the first time, and playing the drums and the keyboards and picking strings on the guitar. She's 15 months. It's amazing. I'm sorry.
You're sharing stories, and that's one of the things I love about spending time with you. But speaking of stories, something you said relationships are worth a lot more than how much money you're making, how much money we're making. Can you share some stories? Some of the relationships that you've seen, blossom out of Bloom Bars, whether it's just through meeting at like a poetry open mic night, or, just some stories that stand out.
Yeah. Gosh. I don't know where to start.
Yeah.
I remember.
One about a poet.
Yeah,
that's a
great one.
Yeah, well, this is one of the amazing stories that have come out of our Monday garden open mic. It was one night, and this Bloom Bars is situated in a neighborhood that's really in transition and gentrification. Very diverse community. It's one of actually the most diverse zip codes in the country. And there's a group of kids that are pretty, that are pretty rough. And I know them, and engage them. And one of them came by, and he's probably the shortest. He's a very slight character, but he's the leader. And he had all his guys behind him, arms crossed, sitting up against the car, like, don't touch him, like, we got his back. And he said something that just really blew me away. He said, I want to do poetry. I want to do poetry. I said, that's beautiful. We can help you out. We've got lots of poetry here. We've actually got an open mic every Monday night. It's all ages. Everything we do is all ages all the time. So please, come on in. Come on Monday night. We've got you covered. He said, no, you don't understand. You don't understand. I want to do poetry in the morning. Poetry in the morning? Yeah, I want to do poetry in the morning before school. What do you say to that? it blew me away. And then, I said, come back the next day, and we'll talk about it. We'll figure something out, and we'll make it happen. We'll figure out a way. So the next day, I'm at the, our local coffee shop, and it's not Starbucks. It moves at a pace all its own. It takes a while. It was a normal long line, but it was a little longer than normal. And I looked up front, and I saw the owner kind of had this puzzled look on his face, and he was looking down. And I looked to the side. I leaned back, and I saw it was this young man asking if they could provide coffee for poetry in the morning. Before we had even met, he was there asking.
Wow.
I wish everybody could see Emmett's face. So sure enough, Poetry in the Morning exists today, and it's at 7:30 to 8:15 every Monday morning. You can come, adults, youth, anybody, before school, before work, and express yourself. And Monday morning before work, anything on a microphone, I think, is poetry at that time of the day.
Huh. Has this tough group softened up a bit?
Yeah, you know, yes and no. You know, I think the beautiful thing is there's some really fantastic success stories. There's one young man, his name is Andre. He was another leader that had a really rough stint, and he's come around. He has a son who he brings to the space, and he's just really changed his life around. But you know, at the same time, some of the other youth that, you know, I remember 4 years ago, were just doing kind of petty things, have graduated, and sadly, I'm still a little shaken from this. But last night, I witnessed them from, I stuck my head out the window just in time to see their face committing an assault and armed robbery in front of my house. Ended up, I knew the police officer. We went around having to look for these guys. They really did this guy. You know, this guy was really. So there, you know, we've got a lot of work to do. You know, we've got a lot of work to do, and we're not. I think we all do. You have to understand that they're a part of this community, and they feel like, you know, they're no longer considered. I think in many cases. And, sorry.
No, so with that, actually, this brings up something interesting.
Sure,
because.
Sure.
You know, and this is more to your character in a sense. So you look out the window and you see this armed robbery happening. It's a tough group of kids or whatnot. I mean, and retaliation is always a fear too. You know, and you know, unfortunately, whenever sometimes crimes are going on, a lot of people just look the other way because they don't want to be bothered. They don't want to be troubled. They don't know what the impacts will be. Yet you went out and went with the police and you guys went searching for these folks. I mean, so I guess what is your view on that? Or are you scared of retaliation? Or Is this something that just pushes you past that?
No, you know, I don't. You can't live in fear. You know, love is king. You know, and if you believe in that, and you have that intention, these kids can be reached. Sometimes that takes an experience with the law, that's difficult to say, knowing what we know about our criminal justice system. But I think there's ways to reach them there, and I would love to find ways to. We've been in prisons before, and we've got some new instructors coming in to have an amazing experience with at-risk youth and youth. And we've adopted Duluth Senior High School in Southeast Washington, which is probably one of the rough high schools in D.C., if not the country. And we're bringing our programming to these youth. So. You know, we're not going to reach everybody, but we're not just thinking, you know, they have to come here, but we're going out there and trying to reach them. So if I think about retaliation, you know, when I first moved in here, I also was witness to a homicide in the alley, and you know, I had to be a witness to that. And this was a young Howard University student that was shot dead. And, you know, I still think about him, and I carry his memory here at Bloom Bars before Bloom Bars even existed. These are the times that there's violence, and that there's an antidote. And maybe it's a little idealistic. I don't know. But no, it's an unfortunate situation, but. I think to be in the community and to be a part of the community, you have to take responsibility for it. You can't just look the other way and hope it doesn't happen to you or your friends.
So I think we'll have one more question, and then we'll open it up to Q&A. And wow, I didn't even know that you had adopted a school, that you do this sort of outreach, and I guess in the Bloom Bars way. But that's actually connected to one of my questions as well. In a way that I guess I want you to talk about the role that you want Bloom Bars to have also in creating awareness about, you know, issues that you care about and that others care about that are important, whether it's, you know, climate change or women's empowerment, and you have this artist in residence program, and connecting, you know, the artists in residence to causes. Can you tell us more about that program and connected to that, the role of art in creating awareness and connecting people to causes and in a natural way?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, obviously you look at our schedule and the things that we do, and you can see that we believe that art and creativity can connect people to causes and issues. So just about everything we do here, we're trying to highlight an issue, whether it's through our Bloom Screen Indie Film Nights and having real meaningful, long discussions after the film with the filmmakers about topics ranging from the environment to social justice to poverty and hunger and HIV and just a whole range of issues. I think, you know, using film and art and music and artists to connect people with service and with organizations in need is a natural and something I believe very, very strongly in. At a more sort of a deeper investment is in a smaller group of artists who we believe have the potential to reach many, many millions of people and influence them through their art. So whether it's, one of our residents, his name is Gabriel Asheru Ben. He's known probably most widely for his writing the theme song to The Boondocks and You Want a Peabody for writing one of the episodes. An amazing, amazing person. But, you know, he thinks of himself as an educator and an activist, and he's committed himself to service and using his art to teach literacy. You know, he developed a curriculum using hip-hop lyrics to teach youth how to read and connect differently and connect with other cultures. And he teaches teachers how to be more culturally connected to their communities. He brings artists into schools and he trains them. So artists who are, you know, full-time artists and struggling, he teaches them how to teach in schools, and he places them in schools all over the city. So we're investing in him and his growth, not only as an artist, but as an educator, as a social entrepreneur, and the possibility that the things that he's creating can do. It's a more recent artist in Bloom, resident, her name is Tamika Love Jones, an amazing jazz and blues and soul vocalist. She's passionate about really bringing healthy eating and vegan messages to underserved communities. So we develop partnerships with Compassion Over Killing and Veg DC, and she's written songs. We want to come out with a whole album about this issue. So supporting her growth as an artist and her potential is going to have a profound impact because of what she's committed to and really, you know, committed to now at this point in her career, where she can really, you know, become an expert and entrench herself in the issue and develop some meaningful relationships that'll, you know, won't be that, you know. I think we all know what happens to many celebrities when they get big, and, you know, some of them use their celebrity for good. Some of them don't really understand the power, and many of them aren't connected to the causes that they may feel passionate about and want to serve, because they're coming from, you know, a very different perspective at that point. But I think rooting them at this period in their careers does something, you know, and supporting their growth in that holistic way. So it's not just about their art; it's really about developing themselves as human beings. So finding what they need, and it's not about, you know, one size fits all. Every person, every artist has different needs, and so it really is about looking at them holistically, and then you know, thinking about that larger stage and what's the next step for them to get there, and how do you make that happen? So I spend a lot of my time just, you know, being an advisor and counselor and friend to these artists and looking for opportunities to get them to that next level. I'm really excited. You know, yesterday, this has just been a roller coaster week. I got an invitation in the mail from the White House, and and it was for a celebration of the blues in February.
Wow.
I'm really excited to take one of our and you know, help elevate one of those issues. That's where I feel the most passion.
Thank you.
Great. I think we're going to now move over to the Q&A portion of the call, and so. So for those of you that have questions, please push *6, and then you will be placed into the queue. And then as soon as you are up, you're up or you're next in the queue, you'll be notified. And so, again, that's *6.
Hi, this is Rahul in San Mateo. First, I just wanted to thank you,
Rahul,
John.
Can you hold on for a second? Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, great. I first just wanted to thank you, John, for taking time out to share your journey and to share about Bloombars with all of us. Given the way that the way that you've marketed it so far, with being something small that even people sort of walking by or people who live in the neighborhood may not always know about, it feels really special for all of us. Especially me on the West Coast, to learn about this place. So I wanted to thank you for making the time for that. My question is about some of the personal and financial sacrifice that I know must have gone into this. I think Bella or Amit touched on it briefly, and I think a lot of people, you know, have these sorts of passions inside of them that they want to bring into the world, kind of the way that you've brought Bloombars into the world, and the sacrifice is something that gets in the way. And I think that you also now have a kid, so I wanted to hear about how you process the concept of sacrifice and how that concept changed after you became a parent.
Way to start him off light, Rahul.
I think, you know, a greater degree of urgency. I think, you know, before there was a field the field and they will come mentality into some respect. You know, this is something where we want you to come here. And then I think when my daughter came, now the time is to really go out and connect and have and advance, you know, this idea to more of a sustainable organization, and you know, that's been through increasing programming, to just looking at different partnerships, different opportunities outside of Bloombars where we can curate festivals. Act as a service provider in some cases for organizations that are looking for you know, the kinds of programming and things that we're offering. It's not just a dance class. It's really, you know, it's an education. It's, you know, it's connected to something beyond just the art. I think I'm in it. You know, I'm in the middle of that. And having a daughter, having an amazing that I'm with every day. I'm a daytime dad, so I'm with her from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. every day, and in the mornings on the weekend. So she's really become a significant inspiration, if not the inspiration, and I feel like my silent partner. And all of this, and that, you know, and also really, you know, looking younger, looking, you know, I think we people say, who comes to Bloom Bars? Well, people of all ages come. But we certainly have, you know, an age demographic, I think. And that hasn't gone to the babies and to the preteens. And so we're really reaching down and looking to parents, you know, who really we're finding really want to support what we're doing, and it's been, you know, it's been a big boost to add all these programs for youth, you know, for our sustainability, but also just the energy that it's brought to the space. I'm actually just child-proofing Bloom Bars. So, you know, it was great. It was great. And it's, yeah, it's changed the way I look about the space.
But I can't let you off the hook. But, you know, again, coming back to what Rahul's point about
sure. The
sacrifice, I mean, you know, I'm sure many of us have ideas, oh, I want to create this type of an opportunity or, you know, an artist space or whatnot, but it requires deep, you know, the realities of the world requires, a financial means and some way to do that. And so, you know, what did it take to bring something like this together? And, again,
sure. Especially
now with the daughter and the expenses of having a child, I mean, how do you navigate that?
Yeah, that's a good question. It is a challenge. It is a huge challenge. But you know, I think part of it is again getting back to the sacrifices and personal space has been a sacrifice. I live in a beautiful 4-bedroom row house and with a basement apartment, and everything is rented. And for years, I had this beautiful space where I could bring friends over and. My family could come and stay, and everybody could have their own bedroom, and you know that's not the case, you know. But the people who are in the house are fortunate; they're my friends, and I know them, and we have this history, and so there's certainly it's not easy, and I'm in the middle of it, and you know I'm it's in your face every day, so. Yeah, I can't say that I've reached the light, but I feel really confident and positive that the people who are in the space and the relationships, and they're here. They're here when I need them. And, you know, we went through a really difficult time last year, where we had to raise a lot of money in a short period of time, and people rose to that. You know, people rose to that. That moment, and I think it made people not take us for granted so much and invest more. You know, that was right around the time when my daughter was born as well. So it was like a hurricane, a cyclone, an earthquake, all at the same time. But yeah, you gotta know the clouds will pass, and that. I guess.
That's great.
This is Rajesh. John, thank you very much for sharing. Very, very wonderful. My question is around the theme of doing the same things differently. So what I was curious to know is in your corporate life, since you came from a service background, your family, your parents, so I guess when you went into the corporate world, you already had a service mindset. So I'm curious to know how, you know, that sort of background made you do things differently, perhaps, compared to your colleagues and other people that you would see around you. And number two, now given that you've done Bloom Bars, which is exactly on that theme, looking at a concept in a totally different way, what would you say? I mean, are there things you would do differently, you know, if you were to live that life? So that's what I'm curious to know.
These are great questions. Really good questions. It's hard to look back and say you would do things differently because then you don't know that I would be here with the people who I'm surrounded by. I don't know that I'd be on this call. So it's hard to have regrets. Certainly, I think there are things I would do differently, and maybe, you know, just there's always that yeah. I think you certainly, in terms of just opportunities, you think may have missed, or you know, when you become overwhelmed, and it's like you have to make decisions to go this direction or that direction, or there's always second guessing, but I think part of thinking about doing things differently every day is letting go of what you may or may not have done right the day before, and that's how I'm trying to go about this. I've really shed that corporate skin. It didn't fit. It wasn't comfortable. It was putting me in a box, and it wanted to put me in a box. And I think, you know, I had reached a level where my creativity, my connections to the community, my motivations, my passion, that didn't become my role anymore. And I think at that point, and I think a lot of people come to that point when I think you just have to be true to yourself. You have to be able to look at yourself in the mirror and recognize that this isn't forever. You know, we don't have forever in this life, and gotta jump. You know, and it's gonna be difficult, and you're gonna hit the wall many, many times, and then you're gonna hit it again. But yeah, if you wake up, Rajesh, and you try to think about things differently, it scared me.
Yeah. Thank you.
This is Rahul. I've got another question while we're waiting for more folks to get in the queue by pressing *6. So, John, it sounds like you know, your background in the corporate world had a great degree of scale in terms of reaching out in sort of mass media in some ways. And part of the shedding of that skin seems to have manifested in this idea of like taking a different way to market Bloombars. So I was wondering how you think about this difference between sort of big and small, or the power of small, or even if you conceptualize it in that way.
Yeah, I think of the process of planting a seed versus watering a plant, and I think or nurturing a plant or helping to heal a plant. The work that I did on a large scale, you know, we were watering and we were touching, and we were trying to touch in all these, you know, 360, every possible way that we can, that the research shows that this is what will move people or motivate people. It's still you're not connected unless you're connected, and I tried to balance both. And being connected, like I live literally 100 yards, 100 paces from Bloombars. It's in my backyard. I can see it from my roof, and that's different. You know, knowing your neighbors and being able to influence, you know, at the micro, at the community, at your next door neighbor, at your local school, in D.C. And you know, people come from all, not just Columbia Heights, but all over the region. And people come when they're visiting from other countries because they've heard about it, because D.C. is an international city, and that's just, you know, that's what happens. That you can still have the same effect, but it can be much more powerful if you root it and plant it and plant that seed and nurture it. And everybody else is going to come in and water. And I think, you know, like I said, we're still on the stage, and I feel like we're just emerging from the, you know, we've got some roots, and you know, we've germinated, and people have watered us, and we're coming through, but we're not there yet. And I think you know, that's you know, the corporate world, you got to see, you got to have results in immediately. You got to be able to show results in a year. You got to be able to show results. And, you know, at the end of this campaign, we need to measure this. And one of the campaigns that was one of the most successful public health campaigns in this country was Click It or Ticket, moving people to buckle up. And, you know, all the lives it saved, moving seatbelt use from 61% to 82% in just 7 years. Okay, that's, you know, that's possible. But, you know, is it lasting? Is it going to sustain? And what are the motivations? You're motivating them with a threat, people with a threat. So that's what worked in that campaign. So I think, you know, looking at things differently with Bloombars, that you know, we don't want to threaten people with toothpicks. You know, we don't want to, you know, necessarily get inside people's head and push the buttons that we know are going to influence them. We want them to open their own hearts and discover their own changes and introduce them to the possibilities that could be, whether it's through organizations, whether it's through meditation, whether it's through arts, whether it's through dance, that it's their own self-discovery. And what greater power is that? I think that's better, bigger and better than any other, you know, campaign that I did in the, you know, at the big level. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, thank you.
This is Audrey. I was wondering, how has Bloombars changed you? I feel like I've heard a lot about, like, how it's, like, how you've created it or how it's kind of impacted the community, and I was curious about how maybe being a part of it has changed you or the way you see the world or act on a daily basis.
Yeah, I think I'm a completely different person in many ways, just from my experience being here and having that daily interaction with somebody new and really keeping myself open, you know, open to getting to know people and connecting with people. Compassion and love and healing, forgiveness. Bloombars has been, I don't know, it's really just opened me to that and wanting to find purpose, I think, in life. I felt like this is that thing that I'm committed to, and just seeing the possibility. I think that anything is possible. Anything is possible.
You know, being in a space like Bloombars and in a community like the one that you've helped to create, not only within Bloombars, but just, you know, you're talking about your relationships with your neighbors and just, you know, building a compassionate community at the micro level, person-to-person interaction. In that kind of environment, that definitely helped you to continue cultivating your love and compassion. You know, it makes such a big difference in the kind of environment you're in. But at the same time, I wonder if sometimes when you have events at Bloombars and someone walks through the door, does a question ever go through your mind like, oh, this person's just coming for free entertainment. They're not really about the energy of Bloombars. How do you, you know, what do you do when those thoughts come through your mind, if they do, and how has Bloombars maybe changed your or impacted your judgment of people and changed your what you think you would expect of people? That makes sense.
Yeah, very much so. You have to be just very intentional, and you can certainly catch yourself. I think we all do. We don't even realize what's happening and thoughts that come in when you encounter people. But you have to remind yourself and catch yourself. I think that's building a compassionate community.
Okay. I had actually a couple of different thoughts. One is about what is your notion of how has your notion of sustainability changed as you sort of went through this maybe corporate or other kind of culture where sustainability probably means getting a company or an organization to stand on its own feet and go ahead, whereas with Bloombars, is it different? How do you actually interpret sustainability? And the other one is like is more about when you talk about community, how do you measure impact or change or make sure that you are having a positive contribution? And does it matter to measure some sort of impact? Or what is some metric? I mean, what is your metric of what's good? I mean, I'm not quite sure if that's the right word, but I'm trying to see if how do you know what you're doing is right and that it is having the kind of impact that you want to have, and do you even try to measure that impact?
Great question. I think a big shift for me was just not thinking so much about what the measurable results are going to be with this, and it's not that I don't believe in the research and I don't believe in measurement anymore. I really do. I think it's important, and I think part of our process for Bloombars is to be able to have those self evaluations and empower people to communicate, and have a democratic environment where people are accepting and providing feedback. But I don't have the answer that I would have given 5 years ago. I don't think about measurement. I don't think about in that sense. Sustainability, I think is still very much just the same. There's a lot more faith and practicality of just making sure we're paying the bills but I think the way I think about sustainability is still very much the same. I've got a daughter. we have this beautiful space and we're lucky to own it, but we can't take anything for granted. We want to be successful, and we want to be able to not have to worry about foreclosure and like life. You know what I mean? Like this is real. Not a lot has changed the way I think about sustainability, but measurement for sure. I think the two are also connected. Measurement takes resources and people. I think that's kind of where we are.
I just want to express gratitude for this call as I'm sitting here kind of smiling and like on a sense of relief in hearing what you say, John. I feel like in some ways these are values that really resonate, and it can be challenging to see them on a daily basis, at least for me. So I really loved what you mentioned about just the whole concept of you bloom, we bloom, and how you seem to have an eye for the way that our lives kind of exist together, and how we're all interconnected in a way. And when we shine light on others and help others grow and reach their own potential and have these aha moments, just the rewards in that and how we grow so much in ways we won't even know or see right away. But to have that trust that, and creating this space and having things just kind of happen, a kid can come and start Monday poetry before school, and the organic nature of the things that happen from that. To close, we'll finish with a moment of silence.